become Prepping 2.0.
An international war correspondent sees sparks of civil war the moment he sets foot back in America.
You know, I've studied war for many years. I've spent many years in wars and conflicts. And anytime you have a big pandemic, you will always have famine and war. This is like the devil's triangle.
When disaster strikes, will you be prepared? This is Prepping 2.0 with authors and prepping experts, Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Online at prepping2-0.com.
Get ready. Prepping 2.0 coming in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher over at Prepping 2.0. And normally at this moment, I would introduce to you my partner on this show, my co-host, as well as partner in life, Glenn Tate. Sadly, he is under the weather today. No, he does not have COVID. He is doing just fine. He just couldn't get himself here today. And that's okay, because I think we got this covered. We have a great show for you today. I'm going to keep it under wraps what we're going to talk about, because I want to give him a great introduction. But a couple of the things that we always like to talk about before we start is, especially this day and age, it's the top 100 list of things that disappear quickest in a collapse. This is posted on our website, prepping2-0.com, over on the right-hand side. It's the top 100 list. It's a list that was developed by those who survived the Bosnian collapse of the 1990s. And number 86, we're almost at the end of the list, folks. It's when we first started doing this, it was kind of like, oh yeah, that's a really great idea. These days, it's a shopping list. Number 86, wagons and carts to transport items and things to and from flea markets, because cars and fuel will become very, very difficult to get a hold of. So get your carts, get your wagons, look for them and find them, get the wheels pumped up, repaired, ready to go. For those who are listening to us and
lurkers,
you're listening to us, you think you might want to support us over on Patreon, you know there's this great after show. We're going to have an awesome after show today with our guest. Don't worry, it's going to be lively. For $2 a month, you can listen to that extra little segment, and we're going to be adding more for more content for our Patreon supporters. So hang in there with us. Other cool thing, it's that time of year, folks. It is fall, and you will see over on our merch shack, we have still got some stock of our I Miss America hoodies that are so warm, so cozy, so comfortable, and every time you wear it out into the public, you will have somebody come up to you and say, I miss America too. Encourage you to go over there. So real quick, shout out to our first sponsor, Minutemen Coffee, Minutemen, plural, coffee. Great folks over there. They have developed the I Miss America blend. Encourage you to go check them out at our website. Again, go to prepping2-0.com, click on friends and affiliates, Minutemen Coffee. Go to that link. If you try to find Minutemen Coffee over on social media, they keep getting banned and shut down. Just go through our website. When you check out, use the words I Miss America and you get 15% off your order. I want to introduce to you our guest. He is a very amazing, eclectic person, former Green Beret. He has traveled or lived in 48 U.S. states and 75 countries. He's spent more than half of his life overseas, including many in wars and conflicts and countries of distress. He's an experienced living combat correspondent, author of 6 books, long-term mobile prepper. We're going to talk about that with him. I'm excited to kind of dig into what he means by that. Recently, he was kicked out of Hong Kong while reporting on the resisting incursion, and he's published in dozens of languages and global outlets, and he appears regularly on Steve Bannon's War Room Pandemic. Ladies and gentlemen, with me today is correspondent Michael Yon. Hello, Michael Yon.
Hello from Lacey, Washington. I just got back to the United States. I haven't even stepped foot in the United States for 6 or 7 years, and I haven't really been back for a good 10, actually. I've been over in various wars and conflicts, just got kicked out of Hong Kong this year, and then I came straight to Portland, Oregon. Not straight, actually. I went back to my office entirely, and then I've come back to Portland now, and now I'm in Lacey, Washington, actually. But you know, because we have, you know, such a situation developing in the United States that I figured that it was time to bring my skills home.
You spent quite some time in Portland. Tell us about that. And you weren't just there for, you know, lattes and salad bars, right? You had an assignment you were working on.
Yeah, self-assignment. Out of everywhere in America, I headed to Portland first. Because, Antifa's down there, fighting and fighting with the federal and local law enforcement on a constant basis. And they've been besieging, the downtown area mm-hmm. as well as homeless situation there is pathetic. I mean, it's really even without Antifa BLM issues going on, the homeless issues itself is pretty dramatic insofar as livability of the city. Mm-hmm. I was out there with Antifa one night. And BLM and I just call them Blamtifa, mix them together. and I was in the crowd and they were calling on the stage for genocide of white people and mass arson and this sort of thing. They were calling for it right there in the open in front of everybody. There was cameras running. It was pretty amazing. They just say it. And then, of course, this mass arsons or what appeared to be mass arsons occurred recently. And, many of the corporate, I wouldn't even call them MSM anymore, mainstream media, I'll just call them corporate information offices or something along those lines. They're in denial. Many of them are in denial that any arson had actually occurred, but they were right there in front of my eyes calling for mass arson.
Wow. So when you say that you spent some time with them, like, did you embed yourself in them, kind of appear to be one of them, or did they know that you were writing and that you were there as a correspondent?
I'm pretty sure they would kill me wow. if they knew who I am. But I'm out there dressed as a homeless guy. For instance, I was out there at about 1 o'clock in the morning with them. I'd been out all day. I started at about noon or so with Proud Boys. And then the Proud Boys were fine. I mean, they were just normal guys and there was a lot of women. It's not just men. They were fine. That felt zero danger with Proud Boys. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were kind of fun actually. And then I went out with Antifa BLM and they're quite dangerous. And the Proud Boys knew who I was. And I'm sure Antifa knows who I am. They just didn't recognize me. I'm going out there as a homeless guy. There's homeless people everywhere. In fact, at about, 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe midnight, they were still fighting the police. And it was kind of a roaming fight at that point in downtown Portland. They had left the park area and were up on some of the streets mm-hmm. near the Hilton and that sort of thing. So I was walking towards a police line and one of the Antifa guy goes, "Hey buddy, they're not letting homeless people go there." And I was like, "Thanks, bro."
Yeah.
So I was just watching them as if I was one of the homeless people and they let me walk everywhere.
Wow. You were there for quite some, this wasn't just one or two nights. You kind of went in there almost like undercover, like for several weeks, correct?
I flew in from Thailand about 5 weeks ago or mm-hmm. so, and I went straight to Vancouver, Portland. So I was going back and forth between Vancouver and Portland, but I stayed actually downtown in one stretch for a good 10 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I was staying just, right by the Hilton, actually.
What is the word on the streets? I mean, all of us are feeling it right now that, Election Day is coming. We've seen the quotes of them calling for what you just said it. They're calling for extreme violence. They're calling for civil war. You have the head of BLM saying, if we don't get our way, we're going to burn this place down. And so as a result, those of us in the prepping community are like, all right, what's going to happen? It's like, who's going to win the Super Bowl? What do you think, based upon what you've heard and seen, is going to happen?
Let's put this into context. I mean, I'm not just any correspondent. I am the most experienced living American war correspondent. I have done tons of war, mm-hmm. the 4 years, 2 years in Iraq, two in Afghanistan, tons in Thailand and real fighting, real combat. I was in 6 months in Hong Kong last year and they finally kicked me out in February. I spent a year up in Nepal. A lot of that time was with Maoist Philippines. So I've really seen quite a lot of conflict. And so this looks probably different to me than it looks to a lot of other people. And to me, I see a complex amalgam of issues in the United States, keeping in mind that I have been all over the United States as well. Mm-hmm. I went to school in California, grew up in Florida. I was, in Special Forces, stationed at Bragg in Massachusetts and that sort of thing. So I've seen quite a lot of this country. And I realize we have a very complex human terrain. And so we have many different issues up here and, Portland area, Seattle area. Of course, we've got a lot of really kind of loony stuff going on with far left wing, completely out of touch with reality about what communism really is. And I've spent years in communist countries. For instance, I lived in Poland for 2 years, and I was in East Germany when it was still East Germany, Czechoslovakia when it was still Czechoslovakia. They want this thing in this part of the country. You know, they want this communism thing, this idea of communism. Meanwhile, we see in Northern California right now, I believe about 500,000 people are without electricity, according to a report that I read this morning. So you've got that, you've got different problem sets. You've got the, you know, kind of left-wing loonies up here. And then you've got, you know, a separatist movement that's clearly funded and pushed by China over in Hawaii, right? Then we've got the sort of Mexican separatists on that band down south and up in California. We've got that. We've got so many different – the human terrain is very complex. Up in Michigan, we have some, for instance, in Dearborn and Hamtramck areas, we have a Deo Bondi issue, if you know who Deo Bondi are. And there's all kinds of – there's the human terrain is quite complex. So if you look – for instance, if you look at Iraq, where I spent 2 years, in early 2005, I was the first one saying that Iraq was in a civil war. And a lot of people were saying, no, it's not in a civil war. And you know, they were grabbing for their dictionaries and saying this, that, and the other. And I said, hold on. Parts of Iraq are clearly not in civil war. Most of Iraq is not in civil war. But parts of it are, and civil wars have this magical way, like fire, of spreading, like a brain tumor. So in other words, your entire body can be healthy, except for that little brain tumor. And if you ignore that little brain tumor, it can spread, right? So we've got different aspects in the United States as well. We've got insurgency aspects, for instance, in Portland, in Seattle. And then we've got, in other places, civil war aspects. Usually an insurgency also brings a civil war with it. I don't want to go into all the definitions, but because that would be like a university course on this. But the bottom line is the human terrain is extremely diverse in the United States, and the issues are extremely diverse, and the types of conflicts will not all be the same. It's not all going to be Democrats versus Republicans or racial or something along those lines. It'll be many different fights. It was the same way in Afghanistan, same way in Iraq, similar in Thailand, which has a big issue going on right now. But that issue in Thailand, if you look at it in the news, it looks like it's very simple. You know, the news makes it look like, you know, it's the people versus the monarchy and the dictatorship. Well, I live in Thailand. I have an office there. I've been there for years. It's not that simple. It's very complex. And every different battle space and every you can't understand it quickly. You just have to get your head wrapped around that part. Same with the United States.
That tells me that in many ways, I hear balkanization when I hear you describe that, describe where all the different places in the United States and the different conflicts that they're facing. So would you, though, agree, I think most would agree, though, that the birthplace and kind of melting pot of Antifa is in Portland? I mean, that's where it has been historically. In other words, I have not seen them, you know, starting a little branch in Kokomo, Indiana. I mean, they've been in Portland for decades and have kind of grown their influence there. Or have you? Do you see that differently?
Well, that's why I came straight to Portland.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The United States is a big place, and I'm very familiar with our country. Mm-hmm. I've been all over this country, and I came straight to Portland. So why did I pick Portland
exactly.
instead of Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. and any place else? Because this is one of the little energy centers, one of the tumors. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I came straight to Portland. And now I'm in Lacey. Bottom line is I'm developing my intelligence network at this time. I mean, just say it the way that it is. When I went to Hong Kong, the first thing I did was develop my network, right? That's what you do when you go to a conflict, develop your network. And so I'm going all over the United States. I started here to develop my network so that as I travel around and end up in Virginia and North Carolina and Arizona and all over the place, I'll be able to keep an idea of what's going on in the rest of the spider web, and which is vital to figuring out what's going on. For instance, when I was in Iraq, I didn't really write much substantive until about 4 months in. I mean, I was going all over Iraq and I wasn't writing much. I was publishing a few pictures and this sort of thing. And then I got there in December of 2004, and it really wasn't until about May, I guess, maybe 5 months into it, that I really started writing anything substantial, other than saying in January that I see clear signs of a civil war in certain parts of Iraq, not in other parts. And likewise in the United States. Now, one thing people keep saying is, well, it's peaceful where I'm at, so, you know, it's not you know, there's nothing going on here in X place. Well, likewise in Iraq or Afghanistan or our own Revolutionary War or our Civil War, first Civil War, most of the country was peaceful. Most mm-hmm. of Iraq was peaceful. Most of Afghanistan was peaceful, right? But that little brain tumor can cause your entire government to change, right? And so it's not like if there is a civil war in the United States, I would argue that there is actually a small, low-level civil war going on right now. I think it's pretty clear, actually, but it's kind of low on the, you know, it's still pegged pretty low. But, you know, a civil war, even if it never comes to your area or even within 50 miles or 100 miles, it can still change the entire country. So you have to pay attention to it. You can't just say, hey, it's just over there. And the next thing you know, California has a viable separatist movement. I hear a lot of Americans say, we'll just give California away. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? Mm-hmm. No, we won't. We will fight for California. Even if it results in the deaths of millions of people, we're not going to give California away, period. California is ours. We're not going to give it away. It's got vital ports there. We don't want China on our inside of the United States and California and Oregon and Washington. No, we're not going to give it away. You're not going to separate. If you try, we're going to go to war, period.
Hmm. So it sounds like to me, in a simplified manner, and I don't want to simplify what you've just said, but you're preparing for civil war by doing this kind of 4 to 5 month kind of area study and developing your networks. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I came back here. Otherwise, I would be in Taiwan right now. I mean, the last three books that I wrote, they're in Japanese, mm-hmm. they're in Japan. They're not even published in the United States, but it's all about the Chinese information and war and their war on Japan and the United States. And you know, because I've been fighting against China for years, mm-hmm. but mostly I've been doing it in Asia. And now when we see this kick, although I would be in Taiwan right now, my office is in Thailand, mm-hmm. but I was actually going to go to Taiwan because that's a future battleground with China.
Yes.
But then when we saw this kicking off here, I said, well, this is homeland. This is my country. This is the United States. Obviously takes priority over Taiwan for me.
Yeah.
And so I came to Portland. The potential is vast for a widespread conflict across the United States. Mm-hmm. It is quite serious.
Wow. You're in Lacey now. For those who are not familiar with the geography, Lacey, Washington is a sister city to Olympia, Washington. It's just a couple hours south of Seattle. Olympia has its own, it's Seattle light. You know, it's just a smaller version of some of the garbage that's happened in Seattle recently. So Lacey's kind of a good place to hang out if you want to be near the action, but not in the action. So what, and let me look at the timer. I'll make sure we're not like, I'm asking you a big, huge, loaded question before you have to take a break. But I will stop here and take a quick break and recognize a sponsor. We love our sponsors. Real quick, I encourage you to, again, go to our website at prepping2-0.com. Click on the friends and affiliates. EMP Shield. Great folks over there. To take their device and plug it into your thing, your home or your car, protects you from an EMP, which is awesome. Use the coupon code PREPPING2.0, get $50 off your order. Great folks over there. Government is buying the products. People are buying the products. Great way to protect your devices. So back to Michael. Quick question on this one. You kind of got a little tour planned out. What's the next, if you can, tell us what's kind of next in line to go visit and check out and embed yourself with?
Well, I'm playing part of it by ear. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I'm in Lacey, by the way, is one of the units that I was in Iraq with, the Deuce 4, the 124th Infantry Regiment. Many of the veterans are here. Mm-hmm. So some of my network that I'm establishing is, you know, a lot of soldiers that I was with and, you know, other people that are kind of, you know, of this sort of world. So I'm, you know, out, you know, getting together. What are you seeing? Let's get our network set up here. So it's actually quite easy for me. This is the easiest network I've ever set up anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, from here, it'll be Seattle. I'll go back to Portland for the elections. If I don't go to DC, I might shoot over to DC. It depends on a couple of things. But otherwise, I'll be in Portland. And then work my way down California. And then I'll probably head up to Idaho at that point and hit quite a few other places and then start working my way east. But I'm going to hit all 50 states. I would have gone to Alaska last week, but you have to quarantine to go there now. So I didn't want to get locked down.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hit all 50 states, setting up network. In some of the states, I'll spend substantial time in, such as California, for obvious reasons. One is it's so big, and another is that the human terrain is very diverse, and that's another serious epicenter for action.
Mm-hmm. So you're hanging out in Lacey now, which is great. So you're the networks that you're developing, it's not just kind of embedding yourself where, you know, in the conflict zone. And obviously in Portland, that's downtown Portland. It's also developing your network, your personal safety network. It's, in other words, it's not just combat, I guess, it's also shoring up, you know, your lifelines, would you say?
Oh, yeah. And also information lines, because, you know, I have friends that live all over this country, right? That I was in combat with, and or that I was in the army with, either way. And then, you know, millions of people have read my work. So it's quite easy for me at this point to go, for instance, meet with law enforcement, and just about every law enforcement, substantial department across the country, there's going to be several people that know my work, right?
Right.
So it makes it very easy for me. It's much easier for me to set up a network now than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was a little bit more difficult because not as many people knew me, but now millions of people have read my work. So I can walk right in and say, you know, talk with the police chief, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that helps me, you know, set up networks first, you know, for people that just live in various communities or law enforcement. Proud Boys was easy to get in with them because some of the Proud Boys knew my work, right?
Mm.
And so and Antifa also clearly knows my work, and that's a huge danger for me, obviously.
Oh, I'm sure. So let's go back to that a little bit, because we have just a couple of minutes before you have to take a break. You embedded yourself with both groups. One of them, they knew who you were. The other one, you had to kind of disguise yourself as a homeless person. And for those who have read my books, you know how I feel about, I call them the criminalized homeless. And in cities like Portland, Seattle, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., they're allowed to just commit crime over and over, you know, lather, rinse, repeat. And they commit horrific crimes. They walk up to somebody on the street and just assault them. And so when you add into the mix Antifa, who kind of does the same thing, it's kind of it's like dueling cousins in terms of, you know, when you're walking downtown, you need to be afraid of a riot and a homeless person assaulting you. It's kind of crazy. So that being said, when you were with each group, and you have about a minute and a half here, give us a flavor of what each group was like and what you felt like with your personal safety with each one.
Oh, Proud Boys are fine. They're just guys. I mean, and women, they're fine. They're no problem at all. They're not the racist and whatnot they're made out to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, you know, I feel safe with them.
Okay.
I went out drinking beer with them. I don't drink beer anymore, but they were drinking beer. So, you know, I went out with them and, you know, that sort of thing. And I met them at a couple different protests And I text with them like many times per day right now, like for instance today. So I get along with them quite well, actually. But Antifa, of course, I mean, I'm not going to be able to just go in bed with them. They'll figure out who I am pretty quickly, and then that'll be the end of me. Right. So I got to play that one a little bit more. I'll have to use different techniques to get in with them, and which, you know, I'm good at that, so it won't be any problem, but it takes time.
Wow. So think about that, folks, when you read the headlines and hear certain media outlets say, you know, Proud Boys are racist, awful people. And I will also say the mayor of Portland, who comes out every time Proud Boys is there and makes them out to be the problem. So got to take a quick break here. Folks, don't go away. There's a term that Michael Yon uses called mobile prepping. I'm going to ask him what he means by that. Don't go away.
More Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher is coming right up. Hear all our previous shows free online at prepping2-0.com. When the grid goes down, darkness will descend fast. Used to be there was nothing you could do about an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, or CME, coronal mass ejection. Now you can protect your electronics, protect your family, thanks to EMP Shield. EMP Shield invented a simple-to-install device that prevents whatever's connected to it from frying in an EMP or CME, and it costs just a few hundred dollars. EMP Shield has been tested by independent laboratories and passed muster with the government, which has ordered lots of them. Google EMP Shield and see for yourself. And save some money. Get a $50 discount per device. Go to prepping2-0.com. Click on the Friends and Affiliates page, then click on the EMP Shield logo. At checkout, use coupon code PREPPING2.0. It's all one word.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years. The perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to Numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com.
Now, more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher over at Prepping 2.0. Want to give a quick little shout out again for another one of our awesome sponsors, Numana Foods. They specialize in bulk freeze-dried foods. These are not little one serving size sort of packaging. It is bulk, like big, huge, put it away for when things go south really fast. You can, again, go over to prepping2-0.com, click on Friends and Affiliates, use the word prep, they'll give you 10% off. And this is the time to do it. We're about ready to, I think, and I'm sure you're thinking that as we listen to our guest today, Michael Yon. Michael, one of the terms that you used when we talked about your biography and you sent me really a really impressive resume of all the amazing things you've done internationally, talked about mobile prepping, a long-term mobile you actually called yourself a long-term mobile prepper. You must be prepared to for any circumstance in a foreign place while on the go. So what does that mean, and how have you had to use this skill? I think this is really intriguing.
A lot of it's mindset, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, insofar as food, for instance, over at home in Thailand, I've got 2 years worth of food. So, I mean, but that's not mobile, right?
Right.
And I'm totally set on electricity and water. That's just zero issue. But a lot of what I do is, you know, somewhere else, right? Whether it was Hong Kong for 6 months, you know, running around in India or Afghanistan or someplace, you know, in Afghanistan where I spent 2 years, a year of that was not with the military. A year of that was alone, right? Mm-hmm. So that sort of, you know, every circumstance has its own requirements, of course. You know, in Afghanistan, it was potential combat. So that was, you know, certainly bug out plans that could involve, you know, being able to communicate by satellite phone with, you know, U.S. military to tell them where I'm at, that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, but in a lot of other circumstance, for instance, in Nepal, that wasn't going to be an issue. It just depends. But a lot of it, what I'm going to do to, as I go across the United States, is I'm about to do a fundraiser actually, so that I can buy a really excellent mobile, you might call it command center, hardened. I wouldn't call it really armored. It won't look armed. It's one of the, it'll be low profile, but something that I can really, you know, have everything that I need in it, medical, the whole works, and get, you know, really close and into the action without being obvious. I'm saying that now openly, but even if you were standing beside it, you wouldn't know the difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, different techniques for different things. I mean, insofar as, for instance, food, a lot of it's psychological. Like I can go 10 days with no food. That's a joke. I mean, I've done that many times. I can just go 10 days without a bite of food. That is no problem. And if you get into the mindset of that you're able to do that, I need water, of course. But, you know, I always have my Katadyn filter and that sort of thing. But if I have water and I'm not freezing to death, I don't need food for, you know, for long periods of time. And once you get your mindset into these, you know, so that you're able to be calm in a lot of circumstances, that changes everything right there. You know, you're not just like, I got to eat. I haven't eaten. And, you know, I missed the last five meals. I'll be like, so what? Be quiet. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're not beyond 10, 15, longest I've gone with no food was 26 days, zero food. And I had no problems whatsoever. And you can do it too. So, I mean, once you get yourself into this mindset, you feel safer. And when you feel safer, you don't feel like everything's going to be an emergency. So you're in a, you feel calm. And when you feel calm, you do, you make better decisions.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, okay. So I'm going to, the one example we joked about off air before we started today's show was you recently got the boot because you were covering the conflict in Hong Kong, and which, you know, happened right before, which kind of died off. I mean, I hate to use those terms, but kind of went away with COVID. And I think we all have our speculations on that. But and then you came here. So I don't imagine that the Chinese and or Hong Kong officials came and knocked on your door and said, you know, Michael, you got about, I don't know, 72 hours to leave. We don't like you here. I have the feeling you were given moments to bug out. And I'm sure that's not the first time that's happened. So when you're in the, I'm trying to give people, our listeners, a flavor of what it's like when you are, you got to bug out right now. I think you hit part of it, or the most important part of it is mindset. Calmly do what you need to do and get it done. But everybody wants to know what's in a bug out bag. I know that. I don't think, and I agree with you. I think it's more mindset. But what is that like in that moment? Got to bug out. And I think your mobile prepping or your mindset is what gets you through that. So describe that to us.
In Hong Kong, you know, I was there for 6 months, and they didn't actually, you know, come knocking on my door.
Oh, uh-huh.
I left for a short period. And then when I came back, they would not allow me to come back in. Hmm. Now, I expected that they might arrest me or something like that. So I had alerted, you know, numerous media outlets, just as a kind of an insurance. So like, if I don't come out of the airport, I had some people waiting for me, you know, go ahead and start doing cover fire in the media. Right. So I didn't just vanish, that sort of thing. But they just kicked me out. You can see it. It was on the news. You can see Time Magazine did a story about it, that sort of thing. But you know, of course, China is saying that the United States is undermining their, you know, their bear Hong Kong, right? Which, you know, I plead guilty. I've been undermining that for years. So, I mean, it's not like that's without, you know, merit. You know?
Right, exactly.
But, you know, and now it didn't calm down in Hong Kong because of the virus. It's calmed down. It's not really calmed down. It's what's happened is, you know, China took over.
Right.
China has basically done a Cuba on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, 12 Hong Kongers tried to escape over to Taiwan recently. They got picked up, and you can see the flight radar 24 flight path, you know, surveillance aircraft, you know, launched out of the Hong Kong airport and was circling their boat and, you know, arrested them. You can see it on the flight radar track. It's, I put it on my site, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And, basically Hong Kong is the new Cuba, mm-hmm. or East Germany or North Korea. All the communist countries I've ever been to, I'll tell you what, every one of them sucks, you know, and they're terrible. And, you know, they lock people in. Look, if you're an American, unless the law is actively tracking you and you want to leave the United States, you can just go. Mm-hmm. We'll just like, bye. Hope you never come back. See ya. You know what I mean?
Right.
But in, you know, in the communist countries, whether it's Cuba, you know, wherever, East Germany, Poland in the old days, you had to have permission to leave. And you're not going to leave without some form of collateral, namely your family, right? And so, and people would still leave and escape. Now Hong Kong has come to that. You know, people are deathly afraid of being disappeared over to the mainland. You know, China has kidnapped Hong Kongers. They kidnapped two over in Thailand, kidnapped them from where, Pattaya or Phuket, I don't recall, but they kidnapped two Hong Kongers from Thailand and they ended up in China. They kidnapped others straight out of Hong Kong. You know, it would be nothing for Chinese to kidnap people straight from the United States or Canada. The only thing that stops them from doing it is politics. But it's super easy. It's as easy as throwing somebody in a van and getting them to the ocean, right? And then that's it. You're gone. And so, you know, it's a very – and China has claimed, you know, domain over people around the world. So, you know, they – if you're of Chinese descent, they claim you as property.
Wow. So think about that. What's just spinning through my mind is I think about – well, let me go back to something you said. And I absolutely agree with you that the unrest in Hong Kong from here in America, the point of view, what made that kind of get off of our radar was COVID, right? Suddenly everything's COVID, everything's, you know, lockdowns, everything's wear a mask, everything's, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And that dominated our headlines instead of the continued unrest in Hong Kong. And where I encourage people to think about this in your preps and in your mindset is think about all the ways, like what Michael has just said, China has its fingers in American business, you know, and its little tentacles. It has it in our, certainly in our tech companies, in our politics, in our politics, if you know what I mean, if you've watched the headlines in the last couple of weeks, and certainly, yeah, would you say, here's a good question. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Michael. Would you say that some of the motions and the, actions that they have made towards America, that they're trying to take, you know, do some sort of taking, you know, taking some property, taking some areas, taking whatever they can?
Oh, clearly, but they're doing it methodically. Right. For instance, Hong Kong first, and then, of course, Taiwan. And that's why I would be in Taiwan right now if I didn't come to the United States. And that's why, you know, last June I went to Hong Kong because it was clear that they were preparing to take Hong Kong. So I jumped right in. You know, various island areas out there, either islands that they're building or some other islands and other areas, they're clearly taking. There's a part of Thailand, I think, that they will eventually go for called the Kra Isthmus. Of course, that upsets Thais when I say something like that, but it's sort of like the Panama Canal of that area of the world. Mm-hmm. There's no canal there at this point, but there could be, and China would like to build one. But eventually, there, you know, that separatist movement that I mentioned early on in Hawaii, it doesn't have a lot of its own energy, but it's clearly getting sponsorship from China. And so, you know, there's, you know, to make a separatist movement in Hawaii and to weaken Hawaii as a state, of course, gives them the opportunity to move right in. And of course, there's many ways to take property, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to take it with Navy and Marines, right? You can take it demographically. You can take it by just moving people in. For instance, in Hong Kong now, she wants many of the Hong Kongers who speak Cantonese to come over to the mainland to study in their schools. And meanwhile, they're pushing mainlanders over into Hong Kong into their, and, you know, so they're doing a flip flop, right?
Yeah.
So they're
yeah.
absorbing it demographically. You look at parts of Canada and Australia. I've gone down to Australia researching this. I mean, you know, Chinese down there buying huge farms and that sort of thing. Papua New Guinea. So just a long list. I mean, where Chinese are taking over demographically and economically and taking key industries, ports. It goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 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 So, okay. Wow. My head is spinning. Describe to me if you can. I'm going to, again, put you on the spot, but I don't think you'll mind. When you've been in these other countries like Hong Kong, like Afghanistan, where there's definite conflict, and again, people love Prepping 2.0 because we encourage them to take their prepping to a second level, not just beans and rice and an AR. We're talking layers of prepping so that you're not just, you know, living on beans and rice, but you are actually able to live and thrive. So in these places of conflict, those people who have done the best, who have survived and thrived and are doing the best, what are things that you see that they did right in terms of prepping, in terms of mindset, anything that comes to your mind?
Number one is mindset. Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, I never really looked at myself as a prepper because I've been because it was the way I was raised up.
Right.
So when you're raised up being that way, you don't actually go, like, it's not a new thing to me. You know
right.
what I mean? And so, but it was only later in life that I was like, I am a prepper, mm-hmm. actually. I just, mm-hmm. It's just the background program that's always running. So a lot of it's just mindset. And, but you know, insofar as things like bug out bags and that sort of thing, to me, that's kind of trivial level prepping. The main thing at a larger level is to have your home base set up, mm-hmm. and then have a secondary base and enough stuff to get there. But you know all that. This mm-hmm. is 101. This is trivial for you and your listeners. But trying to think through what are the most likely problems. Of course, forest fire for some people, but for other people, that's like a zero issue at all, right? For some people, there's not even a tree within a mile, right? You know what I mean? They're not right. going to have a forest fire or a brush fire. So it just depends, obviously, on your situation. Often people are asking me how they should prep, and I say, I don't know. It depends. I mean, mm-hmm. where do you live? Do you live in downtown New York City, or do you live, you know, out on some remote island? I mean, as you know, and your listenership knows, it's completely custom made for every situation.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to come back to that and maybe come at it at a different angle. For those people who are in the heart of like the conflict, like if you were living in downtown Hong Kong or downtown, one of those urban, deep urban, high density, those people who've done the best, who have come out of that fairly unscathed, if it's possible, I don't know if it is, we'll find out. What did they do right?
In Hong Kong, you know, there hasn't been, it wasn't like Bosnia, you know, mm-hmm. by the way, I was down there in Yugoslavia when that war broke out. Boy, I just got out of there because I didn't lose anything there. I was trying to find, you know, but you know, in that sort of situation, of course, cities and towns and villages were just wiped out. That's not happened in Hong Kong. In mm-hmm. Hong Kong, it's just more of a kudzu growing over you, right? You know, there's facial recognition cameras everywhere. There's just total control. It's like out of one of those futuristic movies, but it's true, and it's now. We are in that future movie now. And so it's there. So in Hong Kong, it's just, it wasn't, nobody, not a lot of people lost property. That would be a tiny, tiny number, mm-hmm. Very, very small. And so it wasn't anything like that. There was no serious But there's a few shortages for a very short time due to the virus, but actually there was no terrible virus outbreak there. You know, in Mong Kok, the area that I stayed in Hong Kong, that's the most densely populated area in the world, actually. And so like 3 to 4 times more densely populated than New York City. And so I thought that that might be wrecked due to the virus, but it wasn't actually. And so, you know, when the virus kicked off, I've been watching pandemics for years. And so, you know, last year when I was live streaming from fighting with the police down in Hong Kong during breaks, I would often start talking about pandemics. So we're talking 2019. I would talk about swine flu, and because I was watching the swine flu over in China. Anything that can kill a pig can kill us, right?
Right.
Anything that can kill us can kill a pig, and anything that can kill a pig can kill us. And so, you know, I was paying attention to the swine flu and the avian flu and that sort of thing. And finally, this one kicked off. But luckily, it hasn't been too bad. But one thing about, I want to say one thing about pandemic. Since, you know, I've studied war for many years, I've been spent many years in wars and conflicts. And anytime you have a big pandemic, you will always have famine and war. This is like the devil's triangle. These things always go to the end. If you have a big war, you're going to have a pandemic and famine. If you have a big famine, you're going to have a war and you're going to have pandemic. It happens every, it's right in the Bible. I mean, I was saying this on live streams quite a lot. And finally somebody says it's right in the Bible. And I was like, you know what? Come to think of it, it is. So, I mean, they've known about it for 2000 years, but I mean, like right now there's famines kicking off in Nigeria and Yemen, right? And some of that seems to be related to this pandemic. And every time you have these, this sort of devil's triangle kick off, you end up with big human migrations. And so suddenly, you know, millions of people that used to live here now live over there, right? And it tends to be permanent, right? So that's one of the reasons I'm always about build that wall, right? I've spent more than half my life in other countries. I spent less than half my life in my country, which is the United States. And I tell you, not all fish are compatible in the same aquarium, period. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of us get along really great, and we, I'm usually the xenophobe. I'm not the xenophobe. I'm usually the xeno, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm usually the one in the other countries. I'm married to an Asian. You know what I mean? Half my family's Asian. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of our cultures get along very well. Others, they will fight, period. And we need to be very cautious on how we, the demographics are huge when it comes to prepping. I mean, if you're in an area where everybody tends to get along with each other and there's a disaster and everybody helps each other, well, that's huge. You're like 98% of the way there to survival. If you're in a place like Japan where they help each other, right? Or in a lot of parts of America, if you're in one of those sorts of communities, you're going to be fine. But if you're in a community where, you know, as soon as the lights go out, you know, all the swamp creatures come out and start burning everything down, stealing and raping and murdering, you need to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I figured you'd say that. So we have about 5 minutes left to our regular show, and I'm just sitting here. I'm actually taking notes, and I need to jump over and see what my questions are. So this is a perfect kind of last question for you, and I know you're going to give me a great answer. So Glenn and I have talked about recent poll states that 61% of U.S. citizens are bracing for and actively preparing for, buying supplies, that sort of thing, for a second civil war. Not just Election Day unrest, which is in, as we are recording that, just in a few days, but civil war. And want to know what your thoughts are on that. Do you see civil war coming, or do you just see a whole lot of more summer 2020 kind of taking over November 2020? What do you think?
No, I feel it coming, and have for years. Mm-hmm. And for years, people have said, oh, that's kind of crazy talk. And I'm like, well, I hope so. But I don't know. I've been around the world a lot, and I see those conditions within our country as well. And so, I mean, you mentioned the word balkanization earlier, which is something on the back of my mind as well. Certainly. It actually, this election is not the cause. It's a symptom, right? Mm. I mean, the unrest from so many things, you know, it's not about Trump. I mean, this was building anyway. And so it's easy for people to look and go, hey, this is about Trump. It's not at all. In fact, he's been quite the opposite. He's clearly been a calming force as much as he can, but we've got this, you know, radicals, for instance, over in Portland and Seattle and quite a lot, San Francisco. And, you know, they're looking for any excuse to go at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely crazy. You fall into that 61%. So, I'm looking at the rest of my questions here. I'm wondering, here we go. I wasn't sure I was going to ask you this or have time for this. So in all of this, and we only have like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, so I'm scared to ask you this. Firearms. I know you're a proponent of the Second Amendment, and I know you've been in and out of countries that have strict restrictions, no restrictions, America, you know, and all flavors in between. How important is it as Americans, as whatever's coming towards us in the future, is it important that we hang on to our Second Amendment and our ability to defend ourselves?
Everything. First and Second Amendment are, first of all, you're not going to have a First Amendment without a Second
Exactly.
Amendment. And you're not going to have a Second Amendment without a First Amendment. You know, UK, Australia, Canada, they don't even have a First Amendment. They don't have freedom of speech, period. You know, they don't have. And we've seen what's just happened this year. If you can't call, you can call 911 all you want. They're not coming. You are 911, period. And so, you know, if you don't have firearms, you're just not very smart.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, I think, yes. And as we sit here and watch this, the last few months unfold, it gives, when Glenn's here, we talk about it, it gives us both a warm spot in our hearts as we watch each month new firearms owners, reports from ATF telling us that more and more people are buying firearms, which I find amazing because there's not a whole lot on shelves right now. If you've ever, right now, ask anyone who's trying to buy a Glock or some 9mm, it's like, Oh my goodness. So we have.
I know it. I hear people saying these women, first time buyers and all this. I'm like, what good is a woman who can't shoot? Seriously.
Right. So
it's like a dog that can't hunt. I mean, seriously, why would you marry somebody that can't even shoot a gun?
Yeah.
You know?
And right. And folks, if you are one of those new people, good on you. But you've only just begun. You've got to figure out a way to use that thing effectively and safely and smartly, because there's going to be a lot of dumb people here soon, I think, shooting firearms yeah. that shouldn't be. So we have about a little less than a minute. I do want to give a quick little shout out to our last sponsor, Backwoods Home. Great little magazine that comes once a quarter to your home. Great little prepping resource. We keep it on our coffee table. Glenn and I do refer to it often. You're going to hear all the things that we've talked about. Firearm safety, use of firearm. You're going to find out things about freeze-drying food, canning foods, putting away foods, buying property to create a homestead. All of those things that are on people's minds these days. So if you go over to our website, prepping2-0.com, click on Friends and Affiliates, click on Backwoods Home, and use 6OFF, the digit 6OFF, and you'll get a little discount before you check out. So, Michael, with less than a minute, if people want to reach you, how can they reach you?
I've got a Patreon, just Michael Yon. My last name is Yon, a Yankee Oscar November, Y-O-N. Mm-hmm. And also I'm on Twitter, Michael _Yon, but I'm actually publishing a lot of other places. But between my Patreon and Twitter, you'll be able to figure out the other places. I've got a website, and Facebook keeps cutting me off all the time, you know, and for unknown reasons. Facebook is completely worthless, as is Twitter, but they're there, so we use them. I use Parler as well. I'm on Parler.
Very good. So, folks, as we wrap up this week, and if you're a Patreon, join us on the after show. Don't forget, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. All the information you've heard today, including all our previous shows, is online at prepping2-0.com. Find out more about Glenn's books at 299days.com and Shelby's books at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.